Welcome to the Eat Allergy Safe podcast, where it's all about solving the challenges of living with allergies so you can be more confident and stay allergy safe. Here's your host. She's an adrenaline pen carrying grown-up allergy kid, Nina Modak.
Hello and welcome to the Eat Allergy Safe podcast. Today I'm really excited because many of you will know the products. Many of you will probably have tasted the products. But today I talked to the lady behind the brand and I'm going to be talking to Lucinda, who founded Genius Gluten-Free Foods. So welcome, Lucinda. Thank you for joining me.
That's a pleasure. Well, it's nice to be speaking to you, Nina.
Oh. Well, today, the first question I always like to ask everyone who comes on the podcast is, tell me a little bit about your free from journey. How did it start?
Well, I'm sure with many of the people you've interviewed, it started out of necessity, really. My son was diagnosed with a gluten intolerance when he was three. He hasn't actually been tested for celiac disease yet because he would have to go back onto wheat. And we know that the wheat makes him really ill. Yeah. And he's still, you know, 12 years later, really skinny. So we decided to sort of keep going on the gluten-free and not worry about diagnosing him at the moment. But it was for him when we realised that he couldn't have gluten. That was obviously a blow because it meant that bread was off bounds, and pasta and all the other things that obviously are staples in Western diet. And although I was a chef, I'd never really learnt how to cook without gluten. Mm-hmm. Gluten creates the structure of bread and cakes and laminated pastries, and it prevents pastry from falling apart when you roll it. Yeah. It really is at the base of most of the baked products that we eat in the Western world. Mm-hmm. And that was a blow because obviously packed lunches and picnics and school trips and all of these things suddenly became really difficult. And when I looked for bread in the market, all I could find was a very sort of long life, you know, 9 months shelf life bread that was very dry and crumbly, full of ingredients I'd never heard of, mm-hmm. Really very unappealing taste and smell, and felt that really I needed to do something about it and create a fresh, soft, tasty loaf.
Amazing.
For my son and, you know, for other people out there like him.
Oh, fantastic. And so when you tell me about how you started even going about experimenting, because obviously, as you said, you're a chef. It's completely unknown to you, like many parents out there whose children are being diagnosed. How did you go about starting?
Well, I had a bit of a play with some gluten-free flours and realized that when you add water to gluten-free flours, they make a drink. If you nothing to it, it's like milk and you can drink it. There's no structure, and that's why gluten-free baking is so difficult. You're having to create structure from nothing. Mm-hmm. A host of ingredients that play their part in imitating the behavior of the gluten protein in wheat flour. And so when I realized that I could only make a drink when I mixed water, yeast, salt and sugar together with flour, I thought, oh dear. So I looked on the web, on the internet, which was really just beginning to really grow at the time, found a recipe for coconut milk and almond bread, mm-hmm. which sounded intriguing. I made it and it was like a brick. I could have built a house with it. And so I thought, oh dear, right, this is going to be quite difficult. And I've always loved challenges. I'd written a book on the science of cooking, mm-hmm. for the School of Food and Wine in London. And I just thought, okay, well, this is the ultimate challenge, you know, creating the structure of bread from nothing. And mm-hmm. I'm up for it. And I've got a son who needs it and I'm going to go for it. So it took me three years wow. of intensive development in my kitchen at home to develop a bread that the children loved and, mm-hmm. and friends seemed to enjoy, and a bakery down the road was happy to scale up for me.
Oh, wow. And so tell me about some of those. Where was your breakthrough in developing the bread at home?
I think there were a number. I mean, I had about 12 different breakthroughs with just getting the blend right, the blend of ingredients. It was 14 ingredients in the end, and it was all about getting that blend just so. Mm-hmm. And to get there, you know, really did take 18 months of intensive work. And then I suppose the really, really big breakthrough was when I was actually able to scale the recipe successfully in the bakery. In Bathgate, which we now own. That was a big moment. It was very exciting to see the bread coming off the spiral cooler and being packed like an industrial product. Wow. Because that took us closer to being able to buy it in the shop like everybody else. Mm-hmm. It's 4 hours to make. It's the ultimate convenience food, but it's very inconvenient to make. And like everyone else, I just wanted to be able to buy bread. I didn't have to make it all the time.
Yes. So tell me, how did, because obviously you started in your home kitchen, then you went to your local bakery, like when did it become Genius? When did it become the brand Genius?
Well, it took a year to scale the recipe up at the bakery because it's highly sensitive, gluten-free, highly sensitive, and obviously working with massive pieces of kit, it takes a bit of time. So once I commercialised it, I showed it to a gentleman who had been showing a great deal of interest on the bread, because I would take it into school. You know, over the 3 years, I was taking it into school, showing friends, asking them to taste it. And I took my scaled up product to school, handed it to one of the fathers who'd been asking me how it was going. And he rang me that night saying, wow, you've got something really special here. This is going to change my life. I'm a celiac.
Oh, wow.
And I'd really like to invest behind your idea and introduce you to a team of people that can actually take your home-baked loaf, into a branded place and appreciate the retailers to get it into the market as quickly as possible. So in 2008, I started working with a very small group, a very talented people to create the brand and create that commercial proposition. And we launched it in 2009 into 700 stores across the country from a standing start.
Wow, that's amazing. And had you always envisioned that you were going to kind of create this huge gluten-free brand when you started developing bread, or when did you kind of figure that bit out?
I knew that there was a very, very strong need and desire for a great tasting bread. The awareness of gluten-free intolerance and celiac disease was growing very fast about 12 years ago. It was on the GP's radar.
Yeah.
And I knew that bread is a staple. It's highly emotive. I knew there had to be a market out there. I didn't know how big that market was. I 1% of the population was celiac, but I didn't know how many more people were better off on a gluten-free diet. So, I knew there was a market, but I would never, ever have thought that the business would have grown so fast and would have grown to such a large size over the last 8 years.
Yeah, because it's only 8 years.
It's only 8 years, yes.
And that's a relatively short time for a business. It's, amazing. As someone who's at the very beginning of their starting a business journey, this is amazing to hear. So I want to take you back now a little bit to when your son was diagnosed with gluten intolerance. How did you change your cooking? Like, did it change?
I suppose I was already very sensitive to cooking for restricted diets because my eldest son is dairy free.
Okay.
He's intensely intensely allergic to casein, to milk. So we were already living a dairy free diet. We all eat the same. Food is very important in my house. We like to eat the same meal. We like to sit around a table at the end of the day and share the same food. That's really important. So the gluten free element really put a big spanner in the works for the reasons I mentioned earlier. You know, all those staples that you don't take completely granted as part of your diet suddenly became much more difficult to provide for the family. So I suppose it was, okay, right, if I can't use wheat, what else can I use? So I suppose we started to become much more aware of other grains that we could use. So yeah. Rather than, we used to eat a lot of couscous and bulgur wheat. Mm-hmm. Well, we moved on to buckwheat and whole rice, brown mm-hmm. rice. That became much more important. Lots of potatoes.
Yeah.
And in fact, that's still very important in our diet. Pasta wasn't great at the time. Gluten-free pasta was not great.
Yeah.
Tended to fall apart and turned into funny paste. But now, actually, it's great. It's great. We actually prefer gluten-free pasta now because it's light.
Yeah.
And I suppose at the time there was very little to buy in the shop, so fortunate that I was a scratch cook anyway. I've always cooked from scratch. So we tended to eat more Asian food, relies less heavily on wheat.
Yes.
And Mediterranean, really, which obviously relies less heavily on dairy as well. So we generally live a dairy and gluten-free diet at home.
Right. And what were some of your kids' favourite dishes once you could cut out the dairy and cut out the gluten?
Well, they absolutely adore curry. They adore really spicy food. So we eat loads of curry. We love it. We love Middle Eastern flavours. We love Mediterranean flavours. We eat very, very little creamy, rich food. So I think actually our diet is very, very healthy.
Yes.
In fact, you know, when you have to cut dairy and gluten out, it does mean that you're not able to eat the treats and the indulgences.
Yes.
Which is probably a good thing because I love my food and I think I'd be much larger if I was able to eat all those things all the time.
Yeah, I've been thinking that. My friends would always say, because I'm allergic to nuts, they were like, oh, it must be really bad. And I was like, yeah, but most of the chocolate and the sweets have nut warnings on it, so I'm going to not get so fat.
It forces you to eat healthy, doesn't it? And to scratch cook, you know, which is a good thing. You know what you're putting in your food.
Mm.
And I think that's really important, that you know what you're eating.
Yes. And did you get your boys involved in the cooking?
Well, absolutely. I think because of their dietary restrictions, they are very, very in tune with what ingredients go into producing a particular dish and which dishes they really should just avoid because they're never going to taste as good if they're made dairy-free or gluten-free. And equally, though, they push the boundaries. My eldest son has developed a range of chocolates, dairy-free chocolates. At home, you know, he's very creative, and my youngest son creates all sorts of curries and very sort of highly seasoned dishes. It's actually made them much more interested in cooking actually than I think they would have been otherwise.
I mean, from my own experience, I think that's definitely for me. We always cook from scratch because of my nut allergy, and back when I was diagnosed there were no warnings were not as detailed as they are now. You didn't have as many nut-free products, so it was always cooking from scratch. And now discovering that gluten doesn't agree with me, and recently I've discovered dairy's not so good for me either, it definitely forces you to get creative. I've definitely had a brick loaf of bread before. I had one of those because all the recipes for gluten, and I tried a grain-free one too, all require nuts, so I'm like, oh, what am I going to use instead? I made pastry out of yam flour once. Don't ever do that. It's disgusting.
Is it not good?
No. You're supposed to. Yam flour is gluten free, but it's supposed to be boiled with water. And I just used it straight as in like making a normal pastry. And then my boyfriend and I tried it and we're like, oh, that's okay. That tastes okay. And then there was just this really horrid bitter.
Oh, God.
Yeah, and it was just like. And this was 5 years ago. My boyfriend still brings it up to this day.
Yes. Well, I think that's the thing. You know, when you're creating gluten-free food, it's quite a challenge to find the right ingredients. You know, you're quite limited to ingredients. There's only a few ingredients that have a very neutral flavour.
Yeah.
You know, I don't use chestnut flour, for instance, in the breads because the bread would taste of chestnut. So you're out there looking for those very neutral flavoured ingredients that will give you a mainstream taste.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that alone is one of the challenges we have gluten-free cooking.
Yeah. So do you want to tell me a little bit about the products that Genius now have on offer? Because I know you've started expanding your range, I've been noticing.
Yes, well, we launched with just two. We launched with the white bread and the brown bread. Mm-hmm. And that was just a sort of an astronomic growth for the first 2 to 3 years, just really on the back of those products. Mm-hmm. Now we have about 20. It changes a little bit all the time, but we're about 20 products in the market now.
Oh, wow.
We make pies, frozen pies. We make crumpets, pancakes. Mm-hmm. We make cupcakes, muffins, bread, rolls, bagels. We try and do what I feel is very important is that we do the difficult well.
Yeah,
we do the stuff that's very, very difficult for people to do themselves at mm-hmm. home. So we're pretty much covering that base now. We do pita breads, we do naan breads, mm-hmm. And always trying to make them better all the time. You know, just lots of development all the time to mm-hmm. take all the products on to the next stage.
Mm-hmm. And do you still have a hand in the product development, like recipe development, or do you now have a team behind
you? Absolutely. I developed 3 products in my kitchen over Christmas.
Ah, exciting.
I still enjoy actually doing that home development because I find that I probably think the best when I'm on my own.
Yes.
I'm very, very actively involved. I head product and R&D. And I love it. It's endlessly fascinating because mm-hmm. it's such a new science and art form, really. You know, people have only been using some of the ingredients that we use in bread really for the last 7 or 8 years.
Yeah.
Whereas wheat flour has been used for thousands of years. Mm-hmm. So there's an awful lot to learn at the molecular level, really, to make the bread more and more mainstream.
Oh, how fascinating. And can you tell me a couple of the things that you have learned about gluten-free baking over your years of development?
You can never rest on your laurels because some of the ingredients are from very far away. Mm-hmm. Processing of those ingredients is absolutely key to ensure mm-hmm. the recipe turns out consistently day in, day out. So understanding the specifications of your ingredients is very, very important. Mm-hmm. And obviously working to very, very tight parameters on the plant, because obviously the more you make, the harder it is to keep that consistency. When you scale up, it brings all sorts of challenges.
Yeah.
And it's almost a pharmaceutical exercise making gluten-free products.
That's a really interesting way to describe it. Yeah. But yes, I can quite imagine. I mean, just in a home kitchen, it can prove to be quite a science experiment.
Absolutely, it is like a scientific. It is a very complex blend of ingredients interacting in ways that can change, and it's all about trying to keep that consistency day in, day out, which, you know, when you're making bread 24/7, that can sometimes be difficult.
Yeah. And what are your favorite gluten-free ingredients to work with?
That's an interesting question. Well, I suppose for you it wouldn't work, but at home I love making nut pastries. Ground hazelnut and walnut pastries, and mm-hmm. they taste so delicious, but for you that would be your worst.
Yeah, that wouldn't be so good.
At work, I think really there are some ingredients that find their way into all of our products, so mm-hmm. I suppose they have to be our favorite ingredients. So there's a certain number of starches and gums and mm-hmm. fibers that we use across the board, mm-hmm. Which really do make the difference between something that's heavy and dense, and it's light and tasty. Yeah.
And tell me, what is your favorite gluten-free bake at the moment?
At home, if I'm making something?
Yes, if you're at home.
Okay. One thing I absolutely love making is I use the Genius Puff pastry to make a gâteau pétillier. I don't know if you've ever heard of a gâteau.
No, I haven't. Tell me about it.
Again, you wouldn't like it because it's.
But other people will. So it's right. I can make a nut-free version.
It's got round almonds in it. It, it's a frangipan filling. And you flavour it with orange and chopped up chocolate.
My mum would love that.
And you basically sandwich it between puff pastry, seal it and bake it, and it puffs up into this gorgeous sort of hot pie that you have with cream, or indeed dairy-free ice cream if it's for my son. And it's absolutely delicious. It's really, really good. I love it. I love making pies. I love making pies because that's the archetypal wheat-based food that gluten-free people quite often can't have. So that's an important one for puddings on a Sunday and that sort of thing.
Ah, and then are you still cooking? Because I know your sons are grown up, so you're not. Yeah, they've moved out of home. They live, you know.
No, they're 17, 15, and 13.
Oh, okay. For some reason, I thought they were like, you know, late 20s.
I know I look about 85,
but no, not at all. You're talking about them as if they're like fully fledged adults living on their own, like they're experimenting. And I'm like, oh, wait, no. And you've got a business. So I'm like, she must be so much more mature. She doesn't look it.
No, they're teenagers. I've got three two sons.
Oh, wow.
Which keep me very busy. But, you know, they're all still at home and I cook for them every night. And they will sometimes help. Not always.
Teenage boys. So I'm sure many of the other mums who listen to this can definitely relate.
Well, my eldest is off the hook because he's doing his exams, so you know that's okay. I don't mind him not helping, but I do like to try and get boys to do a bit of domestic stuff. It's important, isn't it, these days?
As soon as they go off to university, then no one's going to do it for them.
Exactly, I totally agree with you.
So my last question is, what are your three top tips for? Actually, I'm going to ask you two last questions. Firstly, what are your three top tips for someone who is starting a business in the free-from sector and they're making food? What is your three top tips for them?
Don't cut corners with the facility you choose to make your products in. You've got to be able to sleep at night. I've always felt very strongly that that our products have to be made in a completely segregated gluten-free site. So that's, you know, that's personal. You can actually do time segregation and wash down. That's what some manufacturers do, but you know, you need to work through that. You know, whatever free from you're working, you need to work through what are the top priorities for you. As the founder of a free from business, because you've got to be able to sleep at night. You're in a very, very responsible position, creating food for people who you could make very, very ill if you don't, you know, get the standards right at the beginning. It's not easy. I think it's very important to not think it's going to be a breeze taking a product to market. And as you scale up, it becomes more difficult because you've got to keep that quality and consistency, and that can get harder as you scale up to much greater volumes. And just stick to your guns again, stick to your quality standards, try not to let them slip. You have to be better than average if you're going to succeed. The free from shelves are becoming very, very cluttered, that the competition is rife, and you have to be better than average, I think, to do well these days, which takes time and effort and thought and commitment.
Fantastic advice. And my final question is, what are your three top tips for mums who their children have just been diagnosed with allergies or intolerances and they're having to completely overhaul their cooking? What would your advice for them be?
I think the first thing to do is go into the supermarket and go and have a look at the shelves and just see what's now available on the free from shelves. There's a huge range of products that really can help enormously in your new regime. So that's important to do. It's definitely worth buying a couple of really good cookbooks. I would naturally suggest they buy How to Cook for Food Allergies, which is a book I wrote.
Of course.
And the Genius Gluten-Free Cookbook, which I launched, which I wrote last year, but obviously there are lots of others out there too. But that just gives you a feel for how you can substitute, and that's important because that just gives you a few tips. The other one is, I think that the social isolation that comes with allergies and intolerance, I think, and intolerances is actually really significant. And there's a particular etiquette, I think, to dealing with other parents. So if your child is invited round to someone else's house, make it really easy for those parents. Mm-hmm. You make sure you meet them beforehand, offer to send food round, offer to make something if they're really worried about cooking. I think that's really important because it's so important to keep the child's social life as normal as possible. Yeah. Because some people are too scared to invite your child round when they know there's a dietary restriction. We've certainly been through that.
Yeah.
And speaking to the school, spending time with the dinner ladies to make sure they understand and that there are some, there are some options for the children to let them feel normal at school. It's really important.
Yeah, that's fantastic advice. And thank you so much for joining me, Lucinda.
That's a pleasure, Nina.
It's been such a wealth of information. I can't wait to share it with everybody. And I know that both parents and I know a lot of bloggers are starting to develop their own products through their own experiences. So I know it's going to be really helpful for them. So where can everyone buy your cookbook and also Genius products? Give me a quick rundown.
Well, the cookbooks are available through Amazon and good bookshops, actually. The products are basically in all the retailers in the UK. And we also sell in Holland, in Albert Heijn, in France, across a number of different leading retailers. Mm-hmm. In Germany, we're in Australia, and we're just beginning to get back into America, which is exciting.
Oh, really exciting. Well, good luck for getting back into America, and I'm sure all my American listeners out there, definitely send your support and ask your shops to go and buy Genius bread.
Good. Well, thank you very much, Nina.
It was an absolute pleasure.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So that was Lucinda, founder of Genius Gluten-Free, and they are genius. I mean, I love the breads. They were one of the first brands I tried when I went gluten-free. As you heard in the interview, my grandma picked up Genius Gluten-Free muffins because they were what were in the shop. And it's so lovely talking to Lucinda. Not only is she a very clever lady both with food and she's started a business, a very successful one, she's also incredibly nice. She is so lovely and such a warm person to talk to and so open. And that's really nice, especially if you're going, I know for some of you, and I know I've felt it, if you're talking to someone who has done something really great, you feel maybe you're a bit lower than them or, they're a bit intimidating. But you know what? She is so lovely to speak to and she is so approachable, which I think is absolutely fantastic. So if you haven't tried Genius gluten-free breads and you do live a gluten-free lifestyle, I would highly recommend trying them. I know that feedback is always welcome and you can get in touch with Genius via their website and also their social media, which will be on the show notes. So go to eatallergysafe.com/episode34, the number 34, and you'll get all the links. Also, just type in Genius gluten-free into Google and their brand will come up. Lucinda will come up. Her recipe book, and I want to get my hands on a copy of her recipe book. I think I've flicked through it in a bookshop or I've seen it online and advertised by Genius, but I haven't actually got my hands on a copy, so I should do that. So that is it for today's episode, and of course another one next week. We're talking about something else. We're not going to be talking about food next week. We're going to be talking about looking and feeling good. And it's all centered around eczema, because I know this is a big topic for a lot of you out there. So how can you look and feel good even with eczema? Have you got a story to tell? If you've got a story to tell about eczema, allergies, whatever, I want to hear from you. Even, because actually next week's guest is an old friend of mine who I got in touch with to get on the podcast to talk about eczema. And she was really happy to come and share it with me, which I didn't know because we hadn't spoken it in a long time. We haven't seen each other in over a decade because we live on opposite sides of the world. But she's going to share her story with me, and she has overcome something that I know a lot of you struggle with. So, and that's, you know, feeling confident when you're out. And this is what the podcast is all about. So if you have a story where you've overcome a challenge that you found really difficult, it might be big, it might be small, but if you found it difficult and then you overcame it, I want to hear about it. And because living with allergies, living with intolerances, celiac disease or IBS can be really difficult. And sharing your stories is going to help someone else. It could change someone's life. So I would really like to hear from you. Listener stories are some of my favorite because it's our own community. And I think it's really important to share our community stories. Also, don't forget that in July, the weekend of the 7th to the 9th, I will be at London Olympia because Eat Allergy Safe is going to the Allergy and Free From show. We will be at stand A69, which is near the seminar area, and I will be launching my chocolate recipe book. For those of you who follow me on Instagram, you'll be seeing backstage pictures of various cupcakes and cakes and little chocolatey bites and cookies and biscuits that I have been creating. And all these recipes I've made so that they're gluten-free, they're wheat-free, they're peanut-free, they're nut-free, they're egg-free, they're dairy-free, and they're soya-free. So I wanted it to be a really inclusive book. Also, all recipes can be adapted so that they're vegan-friendly as well. And I've just tried to make it really easy. So I've done the hard work so that all you need to do is follow the recipe and then the out comes beautiful, really scrummy, chocolatey treats for all types of cravings. So if you need chocolate biscuits, there are chocolate biscuits. If you need chocolate cake of varying flavors, so, you know, like a really fruity one or a really rich dark chocolate, there are things to impress your family or friends. There are, you know, there's a quick 5-minute microwave cake in there, like mug cake. So something for everyone. And I also give you lists of where you can find ingredients, some of my favorite ones, tips on shopping for checking labels, you know, where to check out for sneaky allergens lurking in some types of ingredients, because you wouldn't necessarily think to check for egg in icing sugar. I know, I have found egg warnings on icing sugar. So yeah, I give you some of my little watch out here, because you might not have thought of it. So I can't wait to be launching it, and yeah, it's going to be great. I can't wait. It's going to be amazing seeing it in print. And then it will also be available online to buy. So if those of you who aren't in England at the time of the Allergy and Free From show, you will be able to get it online. So make sure you come and say hi if you're coming to the show. I'd love to meet you, put some faces and voices and names behind the numbers of those who download. It would be really, really nice. I'm also thinking of doing some giveaways during the show. I haven't exactly decided how that will work yet, but I shall give you more details. Make sure you like the Facebook page, Eat Allergy Safe Facebook page, because I'll be doing announcements on there. Come say hi at the stand and you'll find out more information and how that's all working. So yeah, thank you again for joining me. Welcome to new listeners. Great to hear from you again. Returning visitors, make sure you just subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Please leave me a review. Let me know what you think. Who do you want me to talk to? If there's someone you'd really like to be interviewed, are there any topics you want me to talk about or find people to talk about? All the feedback is great, because if I know what you want or what you like or anything that can be improved upon, then I can keep making this podcast something that's useful for you. So that's it for today. Thanks for joining me again, and remember that allergies aren't about missing out, they're about doing things different.
You have been listening to the Eat Allergy Safe podcast by Nina Moga. If you want to help other people with allergies discover this podcast, then please rate it in iTunes. It only takes a few seconds. Your rating could make the crucial difference in letting a fellow allergy sufferer find out that they're not alone and help is available. Thank you.